Oh, God, I don't know what podcast this is. Is this 97?
Yes.
It is 97.
Okay, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 97. I'm your host, James Jones. Now, if our regular host, Jonathan Metz, were here, he'd know what episode this was, but he's sick today. So in his place, we have our regular crew, minus John, and instead, replacing him, we have Nick DeMola, what's your official title?
I guess I'm a staff news writer, but I'm doing a bunch of stuff, so...
Staff news writer, plus bunch of stuff.
There you go.
Alright, so... This is a horrible opening, and I feel terrible for doing it.
That sucks. This is, I think, the worst podcast I've ever been on. I feel dirty just being part of it.
Come on, James. You know this is the culmination of your dreadful Bugsy Siegel style of Sent to Power. You know, days of interim community manager to features editor and host of the podcast. Yeah, like you didn't have this all planned out.
All right, so before Windy catches wind of my plans, started into new business. So Nick, why don't you start us off? What have you been playing this week?
All right, I've been pretty overloaded actually. Okami came out, so that's been number one on my list. Cool. Playing some No More Heroes, and I'm also, I just reviewed Octomania, so may as well start with the crappiest one first. Octomania, my god.
Which I had a startling amount of short turnaround time for how long it took you from getting it to review.
Oh god, there's really not much to that game. I mean, you get into it, and there's two modes to the entire game. You're either playing versus somebody, or you're playing alone, and there's no reason whatsoever to ever play alone in that game. I mean, playing alone offers no challenge whatsoever. You're pretty much, the way the game works, there's like a grid, and you have this little 2x2 square that you are able to control the action on the screen. And then there are these grills that you have to move the octopi that fall onto the grid around, and you move them either clockwise or counterclockwise. So when you're in single player mode, I mean, you have like a few different color octopi that you're moving around, and there's nobody there to make it so that you can't, you know, move these things over. When you're playing in battle mode, there's sea urchins that fall when people finish these grills, so you have like, you know, 8 octopi that could fit on a grill, and when that combo is created, you get all 8 octopi. It dumps a bunch of sea urchins on your competitor's screen. So without that happening, there's no challenge. You just dump the octopi over and you keep up with the screen. So eventually all the grills, you know, disappear and more appear, and you could do it for a half an hour. It's just terrible. So that's no fun.
So you're recommending everyone buy it? Is that what you're telling
immediately.
Me?
I mean, go out.
That's
right
what I heard.
Now. It's $20. Go out and buy it. No, don't do that.
And the review's already
up. Yeah, the review is up. And you know what? The sad part about it is, in the battle mode, it's actually a halfway decent game. But you know, for $20, it's not worth it. And it would have been perfect for a WiiWare game, but.
Oh, dare I inquire if there's any online functionality?
Actually, there is, and that's probably the best part.
What?
Yeah, I was surprised. And it's good. It works. It's better than Smash.
Oh, better than Nintendo.
No.
<Yeah.
laughs> Better than Brawl.
I think that's what they're doing there. They're just putting online functionality in to just stick the knife into Smash Brothers, possibly so they can get one of those out-of-context review quotes that says better than Smash Brothers on the back of the box. And try and score
Octomania,
some
better than Brawl.
Unscrupulous sales off the back of that.
Well, what's the online functionality? Is it battle mode?
Yeah, it's just the battle mode. And I mean, it works. There's obviously not a lot of data being transmitted, so... I mean, it's halfway decent. You could play versus anyone, or you could play versus friends. I tried to add my friend code to the forums, but surprisingly, no one has added me back. So.
Has anyone even replied to the thread?
No.
Nice. Has anyone even said, like, they're sorry or anything like that? Or my condolences?
No.
Anything like that?
Condolences.
I haven't looked at the view counter, but I'm guessing it's one from the one time I looked at it. But... Yeah.
Somebody might have looked at it just to say, really?
Oh, terrible.
Oh, so
good stuff, man. Come on, let's hear the good stuff.
This is just going to be a long series in new business of people being angry at review copies, and it's going to culminate with someone killing John.
We should kind of rename this part of the podcast where we get to brag on terrible games that we had to put ourselves through for review purposes as Catharsis Corner. Or something. we can all put a fine point on the end of that dreadful experience with a good bit of vent and then move on with our life, still relatively well adjusted.
God forbid any of us ever have a really bad game that spans over 2 weeks.
Oh God.
Yeah, it's true. Generally that doesn't happen, but
I really want to give somebody a really bad RPG so they have to play.
You've already done that.
Yeah, I have actually, haven't I? Pokemon Mystery Dungeon.
we'll get to that.
Sorry, James. I don't want to wreck your part of new business.
My rage. Yes. All right, so you're playing Okami.
Oh,
yeah.
Now that is a game worth playing. Complete opposite of Octomania. Play Okami. Buy Okami. Get Okami now. I mean, just a fantastic game inside and out. I absolutely love it. It's a shameless ripoff of Zelda, but I mean, it does change it up a little bit, which is nice. You know, there's not really a dungeon structure like Zelda, but it's, you know, very much the same. You talk to people and do tasks for them and then, you know, fight bad guys and get new weapons. And then there's the whole brushstroke business with this one where, like, certain moves you learn, like, you'll get you know, something that would be similar to an item in Zelda would be a brushstroke in Okami. So I don't want to give anything away because it's still fairly new. But you know,
and no one's played it.
What's that?
And no one's played it.
I'm actually reviewing it right now, and I will get to my thoughts when I come to my new business.
Oh, we're not gonna have a dialogue.
Tease.
Jeez.
But yeah, Okami's great. I really do like it, and I probably put about 18 hours into it right now, and it still feels like there's quite a bit to play, so definitely.
Do you feel like the brushstrokes are actually easy to do? Because I've seen some complaints that they're horrific.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
Nope. No, they're not. Try and do a straight one, I dare
really
you.
Interesting.
Try and do a straight one, I dare you. That's all I can say.
I don't know. People seem to like argue with me about this. Maybe I'm insane, but I'm playing it and my fiance is playing it, and both of us have insane amounts of trouble getting brushstrokes to work consistently. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've gotten some of them where I know, like, if I do it this way, it'll work, but it's not consistent, and it feels like sometimes where I draw a perfect brushstroke, it just doesn't register. And
it's a kind of dual layered problem in terms of there's the problem of actually doing it correctly, but then there's the problem of it being recognized correctly. Is that what you're saying?
Right. So there's a little bit of a learning curve at first because it's a little awkward to draw freehand with the Wii remote on the screen. But, you know, after you get past that, it's just the game not recognizing, like, really obviously correct brushstrokes. And that's really annoying. But
yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting topic because obviously we kind of discussed this before with the whole like IGN versus 1UP and there are probably quite a few other outlets involved kind of thing where, you know, they really like very directly disagreed about how kind of well the controls worked. And I noticed actually not so long ago on the IGN Insider, our own former staff alumnus Mike Thompson was actually sort of arguing against Casa Messina in terms of how the controls worked. So even within IGN, they can't agree on whether they work or not, and it's just a really interesting disagreement to have on something that would seem relatively quite objectively verifiable.
Yeah. Does it work? Yes. No.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, admittedly,
Mike Thompson, when he was doing it, he didn't seem to realise he had that Z trigger sort of straight line helper function.
Okay,
when
I didn't realise that either.
Comments. So,
okay.
If you hold the Z trigger while you want to do a straight line, it kind of helps you draw a straight one. It sort of straightens it out, kind of interprets it that way.
Okay,
so
that may very well change everything.
Right. It like locks an axis, so when you move the Wii remote, it draws it straight instead of wavy or whatever.
Well, I'll give that a try.
So,
We're now officially the Okami Strategy Guide podcast.
With the IGN watermark on it, too.
Oh, yes. Of course. And not to ruin that, but I'm sure everybody's heard it by now, the watermark is right at the mouth of, well, I can't remember the main character's name.
Amaterasu.
Amaterasu.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's actually on the Prima Strategy Guide,
That's
too.
That's great.
Like,
and it's not in the, it's not even in the same place. It's actually on her nose, yeah. Not between her. How does this happen?
How does that happen?
It's just ball droppage all over the place.
But I mean, how did it move? I just.
Well, he obviously lifted a different scan of the box up from IGN. That's really shocking. I mean, you could understand it if it was just the same error being transmitted, sort of virally almost. But in fact, it's just the same error being made in a slightly different way.
I mean,
is it possible that Capcom like lifted the image and then gave it to other people who asked for it? I mean,
oh yeah, I'm sure yeah. they did, because yeah. I mean, it's using the cover, it's basically using a right. scan of the Wii cover, but with the, and I should point out that I don't think any of us have actually seen the Prima Strategy Guide, but
no.
based on a couple Reb reports I've seen, it does appear to be the case that it's also screwed up.
It's
yeah, it's pretty baffling, to be honest.
Though it is nice that they're going to make up for it. Well, not for the strategy guy, but at least
no,
for
you
the
can't
game
really
case.
Replace your cover there.
No,
we'll get to that news.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So, anything else you want to say about Okami?
No, I'd let John pick it up when he goes through his new business. But yeah, I like it a lot. So, thumbs up.
All right, and there's a third game.
No More Heroes, and I
oh, yeah.
barely played any of that, but awesome. I'm also enjoying that a lot. So, good controls, nice presentation, really wacky, but it's cool. And I can't say I've played enough of it to comment more than that, but I did play the first boss fight and had a good bit of fun with it, so.
You clearly don't listen to this podcast very much, because I went on a 10-minute tirade about a game I'd only entered my name in last week. So, I think you've probably played enough to comment for about half an hour, based on that math.
Yeah, that's about it.
Step up your game, Nick, that's all we're saying. Learn to make something out of nothing.
Well,
something
let's
angry, preferably.
It's clearly the best game to come out on the Wii so far, and if you don't buy
oh.
it, you hate video games.
This is golden. That's
oh,
golden.
Damn.
Golden. Beautiful. Got tears.
That's going to get some hate
mail. Got tears in my eyes.
Yes, he's done what we never could. Get real, legitimate hate mail.
Yes, send it, please. At NintendoWorldReport.com.
Oh, you don't want to give that out, man.
Oh, that's getting bleeped. That is so getting bleeped.
Depends on how productive I'm feeling.
Leave it in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Unless you want to start getting emails from Godfrey Wang, that is getting bleeped.
Hey,
and Greg knows, we get the emails from Godfrey Wang, thanks yeah. to the RFN alias.
Oh, God.
20 a day.
Oh, dear. Oh,
all right, so Greg, what have you been playing?
Well, it's been this was actually, I realized that I'd written about 3 reviews in 3 weeks. So this week, after the Mario Kart thing finally got done and dusted, I sort of relaxed a bit more and got back into various things. I got reacquainted with Brawl a little, which was nice, after I rushed to import it and then didn't end up playing it that much after I unlocked everything, but obviously that's been fun. Not online, obviously. The online may as well not exist to me now, so I don't care.
It's dead to you.
It's
a source of like derision for the show. That's it. That's the extent to which it exists for me.
Yeah, it's just a punchline now.
Yeah, but I mean, the game itself, I've been having fun just playing this, that, and everything. Really, not trying to like concertedly do the challenges or anything. Just having some fun. You know, local multiplayer. Just playing a few matches against the computer players is more fun than trying to sift through the slideshow of online. So that's just nice to get some time back in on that. I picked up Wario Land 3 for the Game Boy Color. Slightly random acquisition, but I kind of was late to the party with handheld games. I didn't have a handheld until the GBA. And even with the original GBA, I really didn't play it that much beyond a few sort of core titles, you know, the big ones like the Metroid games and Mario Kart, Super Circuit or stuff like that. You know, I wasn't that big into it. But once I got my DS, I sort of really got more hardcore into handheld games, and now I'm kind of going back and picking up ones that I missed from all the different phases, and Wario Land's one of them. I played the GBA game, I like that, and I've been playing this so far, and it seems pretty cool. It's actually got really good animation for an 8-bit game, actually, on Wario. It's sort of quite conveys quite a lot of surprising personality for graphics that are admittedly very simple, so I've been enjoying a little fun with that. And of course, I've still been playing some Mario Kart Wii online and things like that, and that's been fun. The online does work in that game, and it really is.
Huzzah!
It's the main reason to keep playing that game by far. I mean, it's a lot of fun getting in there with the 10 or 11, I should say, other people and really getting into some fun races, and it's a lot more fun than playing the one player modes or anything like that, because the one player modes is all so arbitrarily sort of related to the difficulty. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can be, you know, if you're playing 50cc, you can be a mile out in front and nothing will ever happen. They'll never hit you with any items, hardly. If you're playing 150cc, it's incessant. Whereas there is a kind of a balance there online. You know,
right.
If you're playing online randomly, you can't do any item switch stuff or anything like that. But even with some of the more irritating stuff, it just happens seldom enough that it really isn't a problem to me. I can just get in there and enjoy it. And yeah, every now and again something will happen, but I mean, it's just not to the frequency that's a problem. It's just a lot of fun, and I'm really glad now that obviously we're getting the onset of the American users and all that. It's going to pad it out. It'll make it even easier to get a lot of matches, and obviously we'll exchange friend codes on the site and stuff. But I did have to express a certain disappointment here. It's the day recorded is actually, I believe, the first day that it's officially out at retail, even though like they sold some copies early on Sunday and stuff, or I don't know, I forget which is the official release date. But anyway, it's one of the first days that we've had America out, and I'm going online with Mario Kart Wii, playing a random match, and it does a little bit where it shows where the Miis are from, and the flags and everything. And then, so, you know, a few from Japan, a few from Europe, so on and so on. And then the globe spins to America, and I'm confronted with a Mii called BJ that, let us just say, has some sort of flesh-coloured whistle dangling from his mouth. And I was like, oh, this is what you've given us, is it, United States of America? You know, I was having a perfectly good time not being hugely offended by what people could do with the Mii channel playing Mario Kart, and now this is just like, you know, I mean, the most positive way I could construe that is that they're like, you know, hackers or something. It's like, well, look, the friend code thing's pointless because eventually someone's just going to create some sort of bizarre representation of oral sex using the Mii channel, so why bother? Tear it all down. You can't save us from just how awfully depraved we are.
Don't say that, because then they're just going to get rid of all matches online.
Yeah, that's
the Nintendo solution.
Well, I did say that was the most positive spin I could put on it. That was pretty funny. So be careful out there, kids.
If somebody with
the end is at hand, our doom is near.
Yeah, indeed.
And I don't even want to make a joke about that because it just feels so wrong.
Man, it is wrong. I mean, it is. I mean, really. I mean, I was, you know, peeved, to be honest, that someone had spent their time and effort just to make me go, oh, I see what they've done there.
I mean, this is killing me because I'm still over here laughing about Godfrey Wang. I'm still laughing about that. Yeah. It's killing me.
Exactly. I do not want to see a Godfrey Wang Mii on there. I really don't.
What
terrible mutant would be underneath that name?
Oh, Lord.
Well, now I'm just going to have to send that over to your Mii.
Yeah, I've asked for it. I'll admit it.
It's now a challenge to all our listeners. Make Godfrey Wang and get Greg in a random match.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Is that your pod this week?
Pretty much, that's all I've been up to. I mean, I guess the big news out of the Europe this week was Wii Fit came out. and it predictably sold ridiculously well. Although I'm still kind of surprised at how well it sold, because if you remember, like, a couple of weeks ago, Mario Kart was like the biggest launch for Nintendo in the UK ever.
Right.
And it was like the sixth biggest launch of on any format ever. No, sorry, it was the eighth. Now Wii Fit has come along, and now it is the sixth biggest launch, of course, eclipsing Mario Kart by achieving that as the biggest Nintendo one. And also, because it's £70, you know, obviously more than double, I think, the standard retail price of Mario Kart, or let's just call it double, roughly. The revenue from that makes it the third biggest grossing opening, as it were, for a game in Britain ever. So those numbers are hard to ignore, and I think the thing that's interesting about it is I was kind of dubious whether the sort of like whether it would have such an early adopter kind of thing, because like with Mario Kart you've got more of the sort of Nintendo loyalist kind of appeal, whereas Wii Fit, both being more expensive and just the kind of game that it is, you might not necessarily think that those people would go out and buy it. For instance, I didn't.
Yeah.
So
right.
You might not have thought that it would have sold even faster, but it did. So that's interesting. I mean, they have. I mean, we've been hearing about it's going to be this juggernaut for ages, and I never really doubted that. But it is interesting to see the results in action.
I mean, the thing is, I think that game's going to be like Brain Age, and the fact that it just sells forever.
You know? It'll have legs. Yeah exactly. Absolutely. It'll have bigger legs than Mario Kart, which presumably is the kind of game that may have bigger legs than Brawl when that eventually deigns to come to our shores. Because that's slightly more to the hardcore kind of appeal. Then Mario Kart might have a bit more enduring appeal. And then, yeah, I mean, Brain Training, as it's known over here, is still regularly in the top 10 now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's insane.
Both versions in some weeks. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, the UK charts are more predominantly casual or mainstream. You know, it's either like super casual mainstream, or it's like the sort of tried and true genre mainstreams, like the racing games and the football games that do extremely well here. So you don't tend to get so many kind of gamer niche kind of stuff hitting the charts here ever, like whether it's Nintendo or anybody else. So, I mean, yeah, Wii Fit's kind of tailor-made for here, to be honest. But it's still, it is impressive what it's doing, and, I mean, how it's going to affect Nintendo's approach going forward is going to be interesting, because it's not just the fact of how many games they're selling, it is the revenue, you know, with these peripherals and things. I mean, it's just crazy what they're making.
Yeah, I think given the fact that two games in a row with some sort of peripheral have had really obscene sales, we might be looking down at what their new mentality might start to become, where they put out these games with peripherals.
Yeah,
I think maybe they feel like it adds enough value to the game.
Well, it becomes part of the paradigm as well. I mean, it almost signifies to the casual buyer that this is a game for you. Because, you know, there's other ones that you bought that came with something. Well, this comes with something too. I mean, it's almost... it may become a sort of really simple eyeball test as to whether something's marketed at people like us or the Blue Ocean crowd.
You know. But, you can go through the list. Well, some people actually bought their Wii for Wii Sports. So you could say Wii Sports came with a Wii.
Yeah, and then there's Wii Play with the remote, and then there's Mario Kart and Wii Fit, and goodness, and Animal Crossing with fishing rod or whatever is going to happen down the line.
Animal Crossing with a light gun. Well, see, there you go. But that one doesn't fit that criteria that came with Link's crossbow training.
Yeah,
but you're really buying the gun more than the.
Yeah, that was slightly different in terms of like the actual. They didn't really push the software so much, but I mean, it's kind of similar. The Lynx crossbow training thing, but the key difference is it didn't have Wii in the name. It didn't just say Link Wii.
Wii Lynx crossbow training.
Yeah, or something like that. Then they would have been onto something, but sadly they
Link's Wii training. I can go there.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not, like I said, I mean, it's £70, which, like I said, is more than double what you're going to find for most Wii games, which is a bigger disparity than it is in the US. I mean, if you look here, like I said, that's more than double. Now, obviously, that equates to $140, which is a lot more in America. But
that's a
but
lot
everything
more
works
cost
like,
here.
With the weakness of the dollar, everything works like that. What's more telling is the fact that, like I said, it's kind of on that double or more of the standard retail game, whereas, I mean, most retail Wii games are like $50, are they? If they're not like the bullshit shovelware shit.
Yeah, they're $50.
So whereas, but then Wii Fit's 90, so it's coming in under that double area. So even in that sort of area, we're getting, you know, ripped off for it relatively.
Yeah.
And it's still done what it's done. So, I mean, it's not something that I'm particularly interested in now, but I mean, what about you guys? Anybody sort of looking to get in on Wii Fit early?
Oh, I've pre-ordered it 3 or 4 different locations just to make sure I get one.
No, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It depends. I'm intrigued by it, but I don't really feel a huge need to have it right now. I'll see. I think I'm going to kind of wait for the reviews to come out.
Hmm. See, the whole thing sort of confuses the hell out of me, because I remember when they announced it, I was just thinking to myself that they're completely insane at this point. But, you know, I probably shouldn't have thought that. But at the same time, you know, the game's not really on my radar, but I know it's going to sell a billion copies.
Yeah,
and that's so. Sort of this bizarre dichotomy that I don't think I've ever really experienced before, where I'm tangentially aware the game exists, but at the same time aware that it's going to sell so many copies that somebody's getting a new boat at Nintendo for Christmas.
Well, what's interesting is what's going to happen with the balance board going forward, in terms of, will there come a time where there might be other games made for it that might actually compel you to buy Wii Fit essentially for the board?
Yes.
And now, because it may sell that much to influence Nintendo and third parties to actually create games that would use it. But for instance, I mean, in 2 days, apparently, it was sold in Britain to 1 in 10 Wii users. Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah. So I mean, already 10% of the Wii user base has it here in 2 days. And like I said, this is going to have legs. So I mean, if they see those statistics, they may. I mean, for instance, one thing I've considered is, what about a new WarioWare that uses the balance board or something crazy like that?
Yeah.
Because the thing with WarioWare is the input mechanism is always different, apart from the remake for the GameCube. It's always like, well, now it's touch, now it's the Wii remote, now it's twisted with the motion sensor. You know, there's not much else to go unless you do go for the balance board, or of course the snowboarding games or the skateboarding games that everyone has thought. So
I thought there already was a game coming out.
Wii Family Ski or something for
Namco.
Yeah.
Wii Family.
But
how
I mean,
keywords
that's
can
it's,
they put
it's real
that?
Question whether Nintendo are going to actually actively push first party titles that make some sort of use or even primary use of the board.
Well, the thing is,
that'll be interesting.
The thing is, I mean, I don't think you can really look at it. I mean, in the past, you know, Nintendo's always released these goofy peripherals, but they never really sold in enough quantities for anybody to actually adopt them, like third parties especially. But
yeah,
I mean, if it's going to sell like Greg says it is, man, I mean, you got to think that. I mean, if you're saying that, you know, there's, I mean, how many Wiis are out there now? Almost 10 million, and a million people,
something
like
that,
already have them. Let's just say,
if it was going to be at the same rate, I mean,
it's crazy.
I mean, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Well, Nintendo's finally also getting off their asses and making more of them. They're going to increase production to, I can't remember, 2.6 million?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I think
in,
so.
In July. I mean, that's a huge bump up. That's like 600,000 more units a month, mm-hmm, that they're going to start pumping out. So it should start to get, you know, more into the stream. And if they can hit it while it's still hot, that could get really huge for them. Because
yeah, sure.
When's Wii Fit come out in the US?
May 12th or something,
or is that WiiWare? Yeah, no, I get confused with the WiiWare date in the US,
yeah,
but it is in May, anyways.
Yeah, it's
I think it's
right around the same time.
Yeah, it's May. Actually, let me just see here. I think it's the 12th.
Yeah, we're informed. This is why we're your number one information source. Yeah, so in theory, that game could still have legs when those new shipments start to show up.
Yep. I think. I mean, it'll be selling all the way through to Christmas.
I mean, maybe a bit more of a slow burn in the US, relatively, given the sort of slight. But, I mean, it'll probably still come out of the gate fast, and then, the more importantly, as John says, it will keep going, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to be huge in America, personally. I mean, just the whole healthy mentality we have here at. I think people are going to eat that up.
The press is going to eat it up. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they'll love it.
And they
but it's basically it's that everybody will.
Exactly.
So.
I agree.
Nintendo will do more of those events in science museums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very enlightened by it, as you could tell.
So who funded this research?
Yeah. That was classic.
Oh, jeez.
Had to laugh at that.
So, anything else you didn't play but feel like talking about, Greg?
No, that's it. You know, it's a big deal. You know, this is Nintendo's cash cow beginning to generate its nourishing milk from its most profitable, i.e. ripped off territory. So,
Radio Free Nintendo, illusions you really didn't want. Yeah.
Sucking at the teat of gaming goodness. Is that what we're doing?
Oh God. So yeah, John.
So,
what did you play this week?
All of this utterly entertaining UDDER, of course. Talk aside.
If you can work that into Ninja Gaiden, I'll be utterly impressed.
All right. Of course, I am. Playing the hell out of Life Signs and Spiderwick Chronicles, of course, religiously. Even
that's such
of course.
He's playing hello, but he's just not writing about it. That's the problem. It's too damn engaging.
But since I've already touched on those in numerous podcasts in the past, I'm
all of them ever.
I'm playing Okami, and I'm reviewing it actually, and it's okay. I have a couple of thoughts on that game. First off, that Z-trigger thing, I'm going to try that out, because one of my complaints was not being able to draw a straight line, really, mainly when you're attacking enemies.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like it's still looking for the kind of straight line that you can easily draw when you're using analog control. It's still kind of checking with that sort of, you know, stringent kind of demand.
Well, I'm
to
sure,
make a
I mean,
if
this
line.
Was a kind of ground-up game from the Wii, they would have designed it differently.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're kind of retrofitting it, you know, it there will be some problems, but maybe the Z-trigger thing will address some of that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try that out.
It definitely helps, without a doubt.
I mean, the other thing, because I actually have it for PS2, I didn't play through it, but I kind of got a couple of hours into it and went on to other things, but the one thing I must say is that it has a really, really boring intro, because you sit there and you click through text for 20 minutes. My first save game was actually 18 minutes and 45 seconds in. And that's that is the intro. I mean, it has a 20-minute intro. And really, you get an hour into the game, and you've really only played, like, one training level. And so that's why, because I was reading, you know, somebody, there was the Okami Wii thread on NeoGAF, and they were saying, like, there were a bunch of people on there saying, man, that game has a slow opening. And I didn't really think of it that way, but it is actually true. Now that I go back and play it again, I'm like, wow, this, I can completely see how this would turn people off that don't want to hop, that can't hop in right away. But I really think that...
But I equate that to Zelda. You know, Zelda's intros are always... I mean, if you go back and play them again, like I played Twilight Princess recently, and it's like... My God, it takes forever just to start really playing the game after you've played
I think that was most... I mean, that was really quite obtrusive in Twilight Princess, I would say. More so than perhaps in previous versions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely a long intro. Aside from that, not too much else. I mean, that's taken up... I'm reviewing that, so that's taken up a lot of my time. And I've also played a little bit of Gaiden Dragon Sword, which Zach reviewed, so look for that. It should be going up soon. And that's good stuff too, but Okami's taking up the bulk of my time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you played both versions actually then.
Yeah.
Is besides it being in widescreen and obviously the Wii Remote controls, are there any substantial differences you've noticed?
Well, I think that compared to the PS2, it's still a really good looking game and the graphics are great and all that, but I think that the graphics on the Wii are just a little bit softer than they are on the PS2. PS2, I have a feeling there's probably some smoothing out going on the Wii that isn't happening on the PS2.
Do you think it could be related to the 16:9? Like, they're kind of fudging it a bit?
It's possible.
That's possible.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
Because remember, when originally they were saying the game wouldn't even be in full 16:9, it would be in, like, 14.49 and some other bizarreness that was going on. Some of those screenshots, I think we still have some on the site from it, have these little black bars on the side of the widescreen. Mm. It's really bizarre scenario going on, but as we've talked about before, even the people who managed the port said it was kind of a rush job.
Yeah, but I mean,
well,
I,
more that they actually didn't even have access to the assets and stuff, and it was just a real like a massive logistical challenge all around because of what happened to Clover and their sort of non-cooperation because of their non-existence
in
the port. So, yeah, there was a lot of difficulties.
But, I mean, I certainly wouldn't say that it's a rushed... I mean, it's not coming across as a rushed port to me, though. Like, it's not a poor port in any stretch. Mm. I think it's been a little bit unfairly criticized, I think. I mean,
I think they did a good job, ultimately, especially given the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that I could complain about would be the kind of stuff that would maybe make you give it a 9 instead of a 9.5, you know? I mean, it's still head and shoulders above every single other game out there for the most part. But just, I mean, it's just stuff where, you know, if you play it on the PS2 and you come over to Wii, you might have, you know, a couple of things where you're just like, yeah, this is kind of annoying on the Wii, but I like it a little bit more on the PS2. But the game itself is still great.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it. That's my new business. Like it.
All
like
right.
Like it or leave it. Or love it or leave it, whatever.
I guess that makes it my turn. Mm-hmm. And I have been playing, as I mentioned last week for review, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Darkness.
All hail.
Yeah. I had to think about which one I had.
Have you noticed yourself, like, behaving a lot like Chimchar around, like...
I have. I've been setting people on fire as I walked around.
Good stuff.
See, I just thought he was going to do, like, street art or whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, first off, let me get a few things out of the way that are good about the game. Some of the cinematics, and I'm going to use that term loosely because they're really just animated screen frames, are really, really pretty. They're drawn really nicely. You'd think they were lifted right out of the show and maybe a later episode of the show, too.
I didn't know where you were actually going to say it was lifted out of, but didn't know where you were going with
it
that.
It was literally lifted
out of my ass.
I'm being nice. I'm going to be nice first. And hopefully the good stuff will soften the blow a little bit. The story is actually pretty good. I mean, it's got a well-written story, and apparently there's someone at Chunsoft capable of coming up with good scenarios. And, I mean, startlingly good compared to what I was expecting. I was expecting go into cave, kill thing in cave, come out of cave, celebrate.
Oh, it's a Pokemon title.
Yeah, it is a bit more involved than that, and in fact... You know, there's actually parts of the game that, you know, are actually have emotion written into them, stunningly.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you feel bad for one of the characters at one point. That's amazing for a Pokemon game.
Wow.
Especially in some of the music, note the caveat there, some of the music is actually not going to make you sad to listen to it. Some of that is actually good. The rest of it's not very good, but we're trying to stay positive. Is there anything else positive I can mention about? No, there's not. There's not another single positive thing in this game.
Here we go.
game is the most repetitive title in the entire history of video gaming. Burger Time, which is the same level played over and over again, has more variety than Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Darkness. This game literally, at one point, had me go through 68 floors of randomly generated horribleness in order to get back to my city, during which time I could not buy any supplies and was constantly harassed by unfair traps and masses of enemies who just spawn out of nowhere in order to disrupt your progress. Oh, nice. And the boss battle at the end of the last one of those dungeons had a bunch of little helpers around to inflict massive damage to everybody. Yes, and I said 68. I'm not really kidding. It was literally 68 floors of randomly generated dungeon that all played exactly the same.
Well, at least when you play it through a second time, it'll be different. Right?
Oh, yes, when I play it through a second time,
that's
it'll
what
be
matters.
Yeah, I need to play that again to make sure my review is going to be accurate. Oh, wait, no, I don't, because it's going to be exactly the same as it was the first time.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of the whole thing about every snowflake is unique. It's not that fucking unique.
Well, let me go off on randomly generated dungeons first. Randomly generated dungeons have no reason to exist. What do they provide that a regular, well-designed dungeon couldn't? Anybody got anything?
I got nothing. An easier cost time cutting. For the development team?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I don't know.
A lot quicker development schedule?
Yes. Here's what they do provide. They provide multiple instances of long hallways that wrap all the way around the floor and then just end in a dead end. That never actually touch a chamber. They just go. And the whole time you're having to fight things that are in this hallway to nowhere. That I'm not sure why they're there, how they got there, or what they're doing in this hallway. Since, you know, assuming they live there, they would know this is a pointless hallway. But they're there, and they get you on the way back out too. So that's lots of fun. And but also great things that can happen. Multiple instances of spawning in the floor, on the stairway to the next floor, not near it, not in the vicinity of it, on top of it. So the entirety of that floor is me pressing A to go to the next floor. It also is gifted me, how benevolently of them for that, with the worst AI-controlled allies I've ever seen. All right, as I mentioned last week, being a Chimchar, I picked Turtwig so I could beat his ass if he was making problems for me. He is, in fact, apparently controlled by a blind child who has consumed way too much sugar for a good day. To put this in perspective, he has the ability to heal himself half of his health every time he uses this skill. In a stage where it was hailing inside, I'm not even going to talk about why it's hailing inside a cave, but it was hailing inside a cave, he's taking 3 damage per hail. It's 10 steps, and then there's another set of hail. Every 2 steps, you regain health. 1 unit of health. So he's losing 3, and then gaining 5 between them. So reason would dictate that, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to heal myself because I only have a limited number of heal uses. No, every time he gets hit by the ice, he healed himself. I had to disable his healing so he wouldn't waste them all. Because apparently he's an idiot.
Nice.
Another great example, we're in a water dungeon. So for those of you unacquainted with the Pokemon series, he's a grass type, and he would be strong against these. He had 3 grass type attack moves and 1 non-grass type attack move. He insisted on using his chomp attack over and over. I disabled it. I'm like, no, I'm getting tired of your crap. I'm disabling this shit. I disabled it. And then he stood there in a corner while I was getting my ass handed to me. Like, he was angry at me. He's like, you want to help?
Like a scolded child.
Would you like to help? I'm dying. Please help. And the great part of this is, despite the fact that you can be rescued in this game, your partner can't do it. So if one of you go down, it's over. You're warped out of the dungeon. You can't revive them unless, because if you, the revive items work automatically, and if you don't have any, you're screwed. But it's just like, what the hell happened? Oh, and the game has a nice Wi-Fi badge on it. Anybody want to guess how it's Wi-Fi? Some to guess. What would you think you could do in a game about exploring caves with teams of Pokemon?
Explore with a friend, right?
Wrong. Anybody else want to make any guesses? Come on.
I have a feeling you're going to tell
Professor
us.
Layton.
Yes, I am. The game is a glorified email system.
Really?
You can get what are essentially rescue mail, which is essentially just email for an email that's essentially comprised of the letter Q, a number, some other letters, and an exclamation point that tells the game what floor your friend got his ass beat down on so you can go rescue him. And when you receive this mail and you accept the job to rescue him, he's not actually there. And in fact, his game can be off and he can be out having fun playing a game that doesn't suck. Instead, you're going to rescue what is an email-created ghost of his in a room full of enemies because apparently they've all been summoned by the same email you got. And then when you rescue him, he doesn't actually get a notice that you've rescued him. And in fact, his game is still stuck if he requested the rescue. Sitting there, unless you feel so benevolent as to log back onto the Wi-Fi connection and send his game a-okay email, which tells his game with the same sort of number code system, you've been saved. Thanks, game. That was wonderful of you. And if you're feeling especially adventurous, you can get emails from random strangers. And by the way, I did enjoy rescuing Mr. Penis from a cave somewhere as he was killed by what I must assume were Gengars. But having rescued him, I didn't feel very fulfilled because I didn't actually get any items for rescuing him. The entire game is the most repetitive experience I've ever seen. The presence of the Wi-Fi connection badge on there is an insult. But on the bright side, you can actually hook the game up to your email account so whenever Neil, who's reviewing the other version of this game, died and went out set out for a rescue, which, by the way, the game only let him call for a rescue once ever, it sent me an email informing me that he had died. which was great because I was talking to him on AIM, so I already knew that. But I then proceeded to log back into the game and rescued him in about 4 minutes, and then the whole rescue thing was done. Also, you can get Wonder Mail, which I assume comes from the server, which is just emails about items. And it's all well and good until they realize that the codes for the Japanese version work on the US version, and since the Japanese version's been out for almost a year, all the codes for all the good items are released, and you can just send yourself a Wonder Mail by just manually entering the code. Their online component doesn't actually require you to take the game online.
Oh,
it gives
nice.
You the code for these so-called rescues, so you can give them to a friend manually, so they can just email you the code or post them on GameFAQs and let you get the nice items. It doesn't matter. This game doesn't care. This game generally made me upset. I mean, I actually at one point got physically angry at the game, its developers, and Nintendo for bringing it here.
Well, as the one that actually put this game up for review, making sure that you would volunteer for it, all I can say is, you're welcome.
Son of a bitch.
I guess Octomania was a good choice.
You really dodged a bullet there, Nick.
I know.
Oh, God, it took me 19 hours of gameplay to beat the game. And when I finally beat the final boss...
You'll never get this back. I'm just FYI.
Oh, yeah, no, it gets worse. I finally beat the final boss after, like, the 12th attempt. Of course, I couldn't go back to town to grind because the game doesn't have any grinding mechanisms thanks to hunger. So, yeah, you can't grind in dungeons either. That's nice. But when I was finally able to beat the game by some sheer stroke of luck, I stood up and was just, yeah! And then, you know, I sat through the 10-minute closing movie... the next 9-minute part 2 closing movie. And that's when all the sad bits happen. And then I, you know, went on to the game to see what would happen afterwards, only to find out there's another fucking set of dungeons after the game is over. There's like 9 more dungeons. And they're all long. Really long. I just thought to myself, oh my god, do I have to play these for review? Please, Lord. And it's just, why did they think we needed another 600 floors of gameplay? Did they really think there were fans out there that ravenous for another 12 hours of walking through stairwells? I mean, it's not that entertaining. And it's sad because those components of the game, the story and scenario, the artwork, and some of the music are all really good and could easily have found their way onto a game that got an 8 or a 9. The gameplay and the in-game graphics, which are still GBA quality, could easily find their way into a game that gets a 5, which this game might actually get.
Oh.
Yeah. But hopefully Neil and I are going to do something special on their review, because there was some concern that we would give them different scores, despite the fact they're essentially the same game. And it would give the impression that one version doesn't suck as bad as the other one does. So hopefully we're going to try to do some sort of collaborative review for both versions. But I can tell you, there's been an email thread going back and forth between us, which is probably bad ethics if we're reviewing the game. But it's just occasionally, I'll just get an email in all caps, I'm so angry right now. Or I'll send one back that says, I effing hate this game. And I actually sent an email to John when I forwarded him. I think I forwarded him the entire email thread.
Yeah.
With a notice that I'm afraid that Neil's going to go burn down Chunsoft headquarters.
To which I responded, like, that's a bad thing?
Well, no, the bad thing is that he'll get to it before I do. I should point out that all Chunsoft makes are these games with randomly generated dungeons. So really, it would be no loss to society. And in fact,
it must comfort you to think that they've not only honed this great art, not only in the previous installment on the GBA and the DS, but over many, many games over time, and that this is the height that it's reached.
Yes,
really...
in fact, Mystery Dungeon isn't a Pokemon series. It's actually a crossover with a long-running series they've had called the Mystery Dungeon series, of which there are a great many entries. And in fact, Sheeran the Wanderer, which is coming out published by Sega, is in fact essentially a Mystery Dungeon game without Mystery Dungeon in the title. So, whichever one of us gets to review that, ha 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 ha.
I got you lined up for it already, man.
You better not. I'll just take the word Pokemon out of my Pokemon view and replace it with Sheeran.
I think actually Greg's next. Greg is next.
Oh, no, I'm not. Yeah. That's a hurry up hedgehog buys me like 6 months. What are you talking about?
How long did that game take? Did that game take 14 hours?
The review, exactly. To be fair, it's not at all comparable.
This is just long suffering.
That's just terrible. In all fairness, that is really bad.
So besides that, I've played nothing to cleanse my palate, which is probably good because I've actually angered people because of my anger at this game. So I just try to keep that under control. So I think that's all we've got for the very lengthy new business, and we'll be back after a break with some news and some awesome virtual console release. All right, so we're back, and we're going to go straight into our virtual console awesome lineup. And this week we have Double Dragon.
Yeah. Or Single Dragon, as it were.
Yes, Single Dragon, because that's all we're getting. So who here has not played Double Dragon?
I haven't.
Really?
I haven't for like a decade.
Tremendous.
Well, I obviously don't mean who's played it recently.
I'm semi-lying there, actually, because I did play it for about 10 seconds at a video game history sort of show once, for whatever that's worth. It didn't strike me. Evidently so much
seconds.
That I forgot that I'd actually did so.
Why don't you give us a blow-by-blow of all 10 seconds?
I hit something.
Yes. Well, congratulations.
That was about it. This is part of like the brawler sort of season in the US, isn't it? Like you had River City Ransom last week, and then there's going to be something else next week. So yeah, that's their way of passing you off, I should say, with single games.
I guess
they
felt like we have enough shooters.
It's their way of passing off single games as a week, because it's part of a season, like a film festival or something.
Oh, is that it? Well, I should point out that I actually own the original Double Dragon, and I always remember thinking that one of the types of enemies looks like his head was made out of cauliflower, and it always really confused me. But then again, in my defense, I was like 4, so I have an excuse. But this game is really old. Was it 1988 is when it came out? It's just a brawler, and you go through town and punch things.
Yeah. See, the thing is, what's funny about it, though, is that, you know, like, I remember when this game came out, because I'm old as dirt as well. And the thing is, when this game came out, you have to realize it was the hugest thing to, you know, ever grace the Nintendo at that time, because this game was so big in the arcades. And even though, you know, Trade West came out with, like, this gimped version of it, this game was still huge. I mean, I was waiting for months and months for this game to come out, because it was so good in the arcades.
Yeah, it is an arcade classic, and I guess in some respect it is an NES classic. But, I mean, it did eventually see release on, like, 18 systems.
Yeah.
Of various quality.
And so it's quite a few sequels, I assume. I think there's a famous Double Dragon 3 thing with the Bimmy and Jimmy.
Yes, Double Dragon meets Battletoads. Yeah. That game is awesome. And it's awesome just completely in a kitsch factor, because that kind of stuff doesn't happen. Oh, yeah, it does. Mortal Kombat and DC Comics. I caught myself thinking, I'm like, wait, shit, it still does happen. First, that kind of stuff shouldn't happen anymore, but it still does. But, so anybody have any fond memories of Double Dragon?
I've pretty much gone through mine, but, I mean, again, it was...
Before it came out, it was like, idyllic time.
Exactly. Well, then I played it, and I was like, wow, this kind of sucks.
Well, yeah, I have memories of the cauliflower-headed enemy. And,
A bobo.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And the fact that whenever you went up ladders, you kind of went up in a crouch and, like, backwards and craziness. Mm-hmm. The game had some serious graphical bizarreness going on, even for an NES title.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was funny because I think it was actually a Japanese game, and the NES game was done by an American company. I don't believe it was done by a Japanese company. That's why it sucked.
Trade West made a lot of bad games. Because Trade West made a lot of bad games.
Trade West was an American company, correct? I mean, I don't think
they
were Japanese.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. I don't think it's got so much to do with their nationality, just so much as it was that they made a lot of bad games.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I might
true.
have, Yeah, I might have an NES collection with the highest highest percentage of titles that are really bad, and there's a lot of Trade West titles in there.
Yeah, there are.
I'm not sure if it was like my parents secretly had a subscription to Nintendo Power and were trying to prevent me from enjoying gaming or what, but I have a lot of really bad NES games.
Trade West, more like Trade Worst.
Oh. Oh, zing.
There's a reason they don't exist anymore, ladies and gentlemen. And it was well deserved. So that's your virtual console for this week. Next week, I think we've already heard what one of the games is.
Yeah, it's going to be another brawler, obviously.
And it's a brawler, yes. So
I was really shocked. I look back at this, right? Basically, there hasn't been an actual... Like, Hudson have published games like on other platforms, but there hasn't been a TurboGrafx game since February.
We've got them all already.
It was Psychosis was the last one. And the Lords of Thunder before that was like second to last one.
You didn't even have to mention Lords of Thunder. You just did it just because you wanted to.
Come on. You know what the last virtual console game I downloaded was? Lords of Thunder.
Yeah, that was the last one I downloaded. You know, somewhere in like Hudson's headquarters, they're like, all right.
I think they realized that. I think they brought out Lords of Thunder. They'd already scheduled Psychosis, and they were like, this really is the end of history. We don't need to release anything.
They're like, really, we've just done too much. We're done with these.
That's going to run.
Or do you think Nintendo called them one day and it's like, guys, we appreciate your willingness to participate in the virtual console, but we're good on shooters for a while. You think somewhere there was like a dejected executive over at Hudson, just sad? Oh, I can't bring out the next shooter.
Yeah, they're just gonna have to concentrate on WiiWare and whatever, all the various ports.
Oh God, which they're very heavily invested in.
Yeah, they are. I guess that might be some of the reason.
So yeah, that's our virtual console for this week. All one game. Thank you, Nintendo. And so we're gonna move on to the news. And the big news for this week is the Retro Studios lost three of its most important employees in design director Mark Piccini, art director Todd Keller, and principal technology engineer Jack Matthews. And interestingly, a lot of the write-ups for this particular news story include the phrase, "were escorted off the company premises last week," which is actually the week before last, but which is a very interesting use of words. They're escorted off the company premises.
Yeah,
but
I think that's a little hyperbole, personally. I mean, I work in a technical job, programmer, and pretty much company policy, if you leave or, you know, you get fired, is somebody escorts you off the property because they don't want you stealing crap on the way out.
So standard operating procedure, basically. So it's not actually notable, therefore it's minorly dishonest to include it in some ways.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, it was the original source of the story. Someone saw them being escorted, and that's actually how we know about this.
But now, here's the part where we go into our rampant speculation mode.
Yeah, what does this mean?
Rampantly speculate.
Okay, so they asked them to make a game that had Wii in the title. And three of them... and those three gentlemen immediately reached for various ways of committing suicide and had to be escorted off the premises for their own personal safety and the safety of those around them.
I like that answer. Personally, I think it's more likely that they're just going on to found their own company of some kind, and they just decided they've had enough of being at Retro.
These guys were
actually... Go ahead.
You think about it. I mean, they have an art guy, a business guy, and a programming guy, so... I mean, that's pretty much the three ingredients that you need for a game company, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, and you pick up the rest of it behind them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're talented guys, and just looking at what they've done, they're going to get people, no question, if they decide to open something for themselves, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, these three were pretty much as integrally involved in the development of the Prime series as you can physically be. I mean, these are the three positions that really made that game go. Because, I mean, it was credited with superior art design and just great technology behind it. So, I mean, this could actually be a pretty big loss for Retro.
That's I mean, my depending concern, on
how.
Yeah,
I mean, because it's a dual layered, isn't it? There's the sort of the problem of the absolute loss of talent, and then the second element is why the talent was lost. I mean, was it purely that they developed a sort of entrepreneurial urge, or was it that they felt they compelled to do so by the circumstances under which they were working? I guess that's the kind of really the crux of it would be more disturbing if they felt they had to rather than just they wanted to.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, regarding the first problem of the loss of talent, we've seen what can happen to a development house when they lose talent. Remember, Rare lost a lot of their really talented people following the release of...
Yeah, the guys that went over to Free Radical. Yeah, I mean, you had the guys that went over to Free Radical, and then at some point their actual founding people, the Stamper Brothers, left. And, yeah, I mean, I don't even know how much is left at this point from...
I think it's basically just a completely different company.
I think there's some people left from, like, the N64 era in terms of people that worked on Banjo and stuff like that. But,
see... The innovativeness and, you know, the design elements dropping off as these people were leaving. There should be some concern, but I'm...
You know, I mean, I think that they're not... I mean, they're losing big people, but if you think that... You know, I mean, they're technical leads, and in any company, you're going to have technical leads who are, you know, pushing the game a certain way, but you have a lot of other talented people working with them, and the Prime games wouldn't be what they were if it was just those three talented guys. Mm, so,
certainly.
You know, I think it's possible that you still have a coherent company there, and it might not fall apart. I mean, it could, but I'm really hoping that it stays together.
Yeah, well, I mean, that again, I mean, if you think, I guess the causality comes back to that, because if it's just these three people wanted to branch out, you wouldn't have thought that it'd affect everyone else. If it's a general malaise within the studio at the sort of direction that they are going under Nintendo's sort of orders, then that could sort of pervade a bit more.
Right.
Thing is, too, I mean, they were pretty high ranking, right? So, I mean, in like their place within the company is more to not necessarily do the day-to-day work, but to more establish like long-term vision, right? And, you know, establish like the look of a game and stuff like that. So, they, you know, it may sound kind of funny, but they're probably more replaceable than you think they are in that kind of capacity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, there's also the possibility that they'll take some people with them, too. I mean, if they know where the talent is, and they could go basically... They could potentially handpick who they wanted out of the company.
Right.
Depending on how loyal these people are to their company versus their former boss.
Right.
So, especially if they're going out to found a new company, there could be a bigger drain of less notable names that come out of Retro, too.
Right. Well, I think also concerning, you know, if they are opening their own company, where do their loyalties lie? I mean, is it going to be kind of like Bungie, who branched away from Microsoft, but... They're still really going to be making Microsoft games, so, and I don't think people will care as much if you know, these key members are opening a new company that's going to make Nintendo games. I think people won't go as crazy.
Honestly, I would almost be surprised if they don't make a game for another console, just by sheer fact that they've been stuck on Nintendo consoles for a long time.
Yeah, intuitively, one might think that if it's a branching out issue, that might be some of the motivation is to work on the higher end consoles.
Yeah,
right.
And just to do something different. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure working for Nintendo has got to be, in terms of experiences, one of the more stressful ones out there.
And it's constraining. Oh, sure. It's constraining in multiple ways, I suppose, I imagine.
Yeah.
Right.
But, although there must be very, very considerable upsides to it in terms of the kinds of, you know, the advice and, you know, the sort of troubleshooting and input that you must get from the guys at Kyoto. So, I mean, there's
the resources you have available to you.
Yeah, there's
definitely
good things to be said. I mean, I guess what's the element of this that's concerning for me is that one might think, well, with the way Nintendo's going, you know, the success of things like Wii Fit and, you know, presumably things like Animal Crossing or whatever they are going to announce for the second half of the year, how much you can count on the Nintendo's internal studios actually delivering games that the more traditional core gamers that play on Wii want is kind of getting more and more sort of dubious. So then you might be thinking, well, yeah, but they've still got these, you know, these wholly owned, you know, first party subsidiaries that they can sort of farm out the more hardcore games to. But if that is in jeopardy, then you really begin to wonder where are those games going to come from. I guess that's
yeah,
it.
And you know, you might have seen that when Nintendo bought Monolith Soft,
yeah,
because they're buying a company that primarily makes hardcore games in the RPG genre, and then had them made a third person action game. Oh, that game is going to be so much trouble. Now, of course, if you don't know, I'm referring to Disaster Day of Crisis, which we have a new preview up for on the site, and every word I wrote of it made me feel more and more like this game is in trouble. I mean, we're going way afield here, but to recount the plot is, as I understand it from a translation, thanks to James C., our correspondent in Japan, it essentially is you're playing as Rei, a former Special Forces rescue operator, whose friend died a year ago, and he's now trying to rescue his friend's little sister from kidnappers. Meanwhile, the city he's in is plagued by volcanoes, tsunamis, earthquakes, and hand-to-hand bear fighting.
Just for the day at the office.
While terrorists have taken advantage of this situation, stolen a nuclear device, and planned to set it off.
Wow. Really inconsiderate.
Wow. I mean,
volcanoes, tsunamis, and bears. Oh my.
I mean, any one of those elements could have been the primary motivation behind a story, but all like seven of them?
Yeah.
What the hell?
It really should be changed to Disasters Day of Crisis, shouldn't it?
maybe that's just the name of the day. They just call it Disaster Day, and it'll just go through like that. But I mean,
yeah,
how are you going to fit all that into one day? I mean,
hey, 24 did it. It seems like another season.
Yeah, there you go. You know what? In the forums, somebody made a comment, oh, it's 24 the game.
Yeah, go on. Not even they've gone quite that far. It's, you know, the natural element as well.
Well, to be fair, Rei does have that really bad haircut, wears tight fitting clothes, and looks kind of like a douche. So he does fit the Jack Bauer mold.
Is he drunk too? That would really top it off.
Yeah. I'm not sure because we haven't revealed his alcohol problems yet in the
yeah.
story.
Yeah, we don't really know that much about the gameplay, let alone his drinking habits.
But the fact that this game was announced and then for 2 years no one said anything about
yeah,
it is
that's
completely
really
mind blowing.
It's just like very buried, really. I mean, very much so in terms of.
Yeah, that. I mean, games were created and cancelled in the amount of time that this title had been announced before we heard anything. And then when we hear this, it's just like, what? You spent 2 years on that?
Well, they probably didn't spend two years on the scenario, I'm hoping, anyway.
I mean, to be honest, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Darkness is a better story than this.
Yeah.
Bold statement. That's going to be
certainly
on the box.
I'm almost willing to give it the title of more believable story than that. But I'm going to hold out reservations because one of the screenshots showed Rei fighting a bear, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
And in any capacity, absolutely.
Holding the Wii Remote sideways to drive a truck away from a tsunami.
Nice. Excellent.
Is he wrestling a bear while he's doing that?
Yes, in the background.
So is there a big tsunami in the background?
Yes. That would be awesome.
Is it possibly on the edge of a volcano?
There is a volcano in the story. Oh, man. Somebody should not have built their city there.
No. Pompeii, bad idea.
Tell that to the Japanese. They've got all those problems. Just not generally at once.
And I don't think they have bear fighting.
Yeah,
I'm pretty
the
sure
bear
that's not
stuff
been a
might
major
be a bit
issue.
Of a stretch, but you know, you got to take some artistic
just
license.
A bit.
Just going to rename the game Japan Day of Crisis.
I thought Crisis in Japan actually made an opportunity as well. So, really, they've got a very positive outlook on all this, all this stuff happening at once.
It's a redevelopment opportunity. I mean, sure, you're going to have to wait for the nuclear radiation to go away and the lava to cool and the earth to resettle and the seawater to come out of the ground so it's not completely infertile. But after all that's good.
We're good.
Rei and his friend's sister can go resettle.
Isn't Rei the little kid's name from Jerry Maguire?
Maybe.
Isn't it? I think so.
It could be. It's been a long time since I've seen that film.
It's been a long time since we've heard anything about this game either. Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, wait!
Bringing it back.
In fact, this game's coming out in July in Japan, so we'll know soon. Just completely
completely how batshit crazy it is.
Well, you know, it's one of those games where it's like all of a sudden out of nowhere it has a release date, so you just know it's crap. You really do.
Yeah.
It's reeks of it.
Speaking of terrorist plots
and
kidnapping, our favorite terrorist motivated arcade shooter just came out in Target Terror.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, awesome.
Greg is pumped.
We've been waiting for this one, haven't we? We have. I mean, we've sort of been waiting for this for like, how long was it out in the arcade? So like, was it 2000 or something?
Was it out in the arcade? Seriously?
Yeah, it came out in the arcade and was generally regarded as like the game that would kill its designer's career.
Hey, $10 more than House of the Dead 2 and 3, this one's a no-brainer. I mean, go buy it.
Oh my god.
Wow. Oh, man. Everything we've seen about this game has just made us wonder more and more if this was a joke.
I think to be honest, my theory is, I don't know if you've ever seen the bit in Jurassic Park where the velociraptors are observed to be tested for weaknesses in the electric fence. This is analogous to that with Nintendo's quality control. Except rather than just, you know, not getting a shock and then thinking, oh, I can try that, like, they just burst right through it on the first attempt and head for daylight.
Just go for it, man. It'll only hurt once.
Really, it is. You've got to say, it is a boundary-pushing game in multiple senses.
Boundaries of bad
boundaries
taste.
It should have never been pushed.
It's just, anybody has not seen video of the game, you have to see video.
Yeah, well, we got the video of the game, and there's heads exploding, and just what are fountains of blood. It was just
but on terrible
so...
FMV people, like, you know, sort of like, these people whose careers had died when the Sega CD was a disaster suddenly had a ray of hope that they might one day reclaim their right and possibly some terrible ascent to Hollywood stardom, but instead it finished with Target Terror 8 years ago.
Oh, I hope the game is actually a remake where we're trying to stop Target Terror from ever being released. They, like, silently replace the entirety of the game. The terrorist plot is the mass release of the game you're currently playing.
Exactly. It's like one of those, you know, it's a game within a game.
Then you get to the end and you realize their plot was they had shipments of Target Terror that were going out to all the retailers. You suddenly feel ashamed.
It's, you know, I was thinking that the game should be called Target Terror. You can make games too.
anyone can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's though. I find watching terrible movies quite life affirming because it's like, these jokers got a budget with this, you know? I mean, I just find it very heartwarming that stuff like that can happen.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, before we kill ourselves on Target Terror, let's move on to the last bit of news we have got today. And that is the representatives from Capcom have stated quite definitively that the NES game Bionic Commando will never make its way onto the Virtual Console. And they have attributed this decision to something done by Nintendo, but they haven't actually gone into saying what the decision of Nintendo's was.
It was pretty much just like, yeah, ask Nintendo about it. It's their fault. But then no elaboration on that.
And the actual quote from from a Capcom producer by the name Ben Judd was literally, "The original Bionic Commando on Virtual Console couldn't happen." Unquote. Couldn't happen.
Couldn't now, happen. That's an interesting way to phrase it. You would think it'd be won't happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they also, and on the official company forums for Capcom, Christian Stevenson, who's the development vice president, said, quote, "Please remember, Nintendo calls the shots on what goes up on the VC, not third parties." It's all very interesting. Now, it's important to remember that there's an upcoming title, Bionic Commando Rearmed, is coming out on the PC, Xbox 360, and the PlayStation 3 digital distribution. And there's the upcoming Bionic Commando, whatever they're calling it, Bionic Commando Hot Dog Hands, or whatever you want to call that game. which is a full Bionic Commando game coming out on the PS3 and 360. And in that game, I believe the original NES title is unlockable. But it was also asked whether or not the Bionic Commando Rearmed could be released on the Virtual Console, and their response was a very definitive no due to size constraints. And they didn't want to dumb it down for the Nintendo because then it would be the lame version. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's when one of the developers or publishers makes their somewhat fake quality stand, where I won't let this happen in the name of quality.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the illusion here is, seems to be, if you think of a similar situation, is with the GoldenEye situation, is that essentially it seems that there was some suggestion there that Nintendo were nixing anything that had a kind of cross-platform element to it. So
yeah.
If there was a deal on the table for GoldenEye to come out in an unadulterated form on the Virtual Console, but then in a kind of a live arcade enhanced, maybe online version for 360, they weren't going to be part of that. And then somehow, if this situation wouldn't be that similar, like you said, it's kind of like it's the same property or it's unlockable in a game on another system, but somehow they just wouldn't be party to that either, and therefore this is unacceptable. I mean, that's kind of the only thing I'm really drawing on this, because otherwise I don't get it.
Well, the only thing I could think of was, I understand why they can't do Bionic Commando Rearmed, because
yeah,
it's going to be a big game. It's developed in HD, too, which the Wii can't output to. Yeah. But so the size restrictions come into play there. The only reason I can come up with why Nintendo would just flatly say no, we're not going to let this game come out, is that they're bent over the fact there's going to be a new remake of that game on every other system. And there's, in fact, a new Bionic Commando game altogether coming out on the PS3 and 360, and they just didn't want to be part of what would essentially be hyping games on other platforms. And that's the best solution I come up with. But in the same point, they let out games like Romance of the Three Kingdoms 4 right on the heels of another major Romance of the Three Kingdoms game, so I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, let's take this. The timeline's a bit different, but they're going to release Rondo of Blood on the Virtual Console in Japan this month, if they haven't already. I don't know what the schedule was. It was scheduled to come out in April in Japan. Now, that exists in an enhanced port and in its original state on the PSP. So, I mean, what's the difference, really? I mean, why is that so disagreeable? And then this
I don't know. I mean, honestly, this is probably one of those situations where Capcom saying one thing, Nintendo won't say anything because they never do, but if they did, they'd say something else, and in fact, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Maybe Nintendo wanted, you know, the new Bionic Commando to come to the Wii and, you know, said, well, we could do this on the Virtual Console if you guys are willing to bring the port over to the Wii, but
Is that really the carrot, though? I mean, that revenue stream or a sanction? I mean, it just seems more petty than it does significant disciplining mechanism.
Yeah,
it does feel kind of like stupid.
Yeah.
So,
but
yeah,
they do
make weird.
Some dumb decisions sometimes, so maybe.
Nintendo? No.
No.
Yeah. Alright, so that's it for the news. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with letters and wrapped up. All right, we're back for our final segment, your listener mail.
Yeah.
So, first email, Greg.
Yeah, I've got the first one. This is from Jedi Knight 114. And he says, hey all, in regards to your issues on Brawl Online, I thought I might just say, I live in Australia and imported Brawl with a freeloader. So far, everyone I've added has turned up fine, and all my friends live in America. All his friends? I get lag-free matches or very close to it 9 out of 10 times. And just a question.
Hold on, wait. Just want to point out right now. Remember, we were talking about last week.
Yeah.
They had the video I got with the Patriots from Australia. What the hell is it with Brawl Online Australia working when the game doesn't even have a release date there?
Yeah,
they
maybe
must have
a very
small amount of servers or something, or just a small amount.
Well,
like servers that serve a very small amount of players, I think.
I could serve to say that it does not apply to other areas of the Great Commonwealth. So, he goes on to say, I get lag-free matches or very close to it 9 out of 10 times. So my first reaction was that, I hate you.
Yes.
First reaction to
that. Oh, man.
And then also says, just a question, has the freeloader been blocked on Wii by any updates yet? I heard a rumour that one of the updates had something that could turn the freeloader off. Thanks, you guys rock. I just had to include that. Now, as regards the freeloader, I'm totally up to date with all the updates on the firmware, and the freeloader has not been broken. So that's the first part of the question. As to the rumor, I can only say that it probably is. There was something going around with the guys, the people that do like the Wii homebrew scene people, had sort of noticed that there'd been some sort of update prepared for the American firmware. It basically was that the exploit that the freeloader uses to get it to read was going to be closed at some point, like once they sort of started running the Wii menu on the new version of the firmware. But that update hasn't actually gone up yet, as it were. That's kind of my impression of it, that it may well be true that there is something in the pipeline that's coming that could render it obsolete. But it hasn't happened yet. So if you haven't, as of tonight of recording, I've downloaded every update I could get, and everything still works.
Right. And as I understand it, there were things in the update that indicated that Nintendo was ready to flip that switch.
Yes, there's definite indications they're preparing something that will kill it from the guys that are in the Wii homebrew scene. But in terms of when that's going to happen, I've no idea. I mean, I'm just hoping they can at least hold out till June 27th so that I can actually get a European copy of Brawl when that happens.
One thing that worries me is that recently, and I don't want to go into too much detail about this, the virtual console file was completely cracked by someone, and
yeah,
the code for cracking it was posted online, which is probably going to force Nintendo's hand to close a lot of these security holes, because with WiiWare coming out, that's a much more expensive thing to steal than some ROMs. Mm-hmm. And I think developers are going to want Nintendo to offer a secure platform, so it could be soon that they go ahead and make the move on this with WiiWare coming out relatively soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's May 12th, and I think May 20th in Europe, so then it will be kind of worldwide at that point, just, a few weeks into May. So, yeah, it's a concern. I mean, it may well happen. I personally went into it with my eyes wide open, expecting that it would probably happen at some point. And it'll be sad. It'll be annoying. I'll have to play through the Subspace Emissary again. It is irritating, but in the end, I guess if you were prepared for this, then, which, in many ways you kind of should have been, I guess the question is, how could you manage without downloading the updates?
Not very well, because a lot of the games have the I suppose they could do what's happened with the PSP, where they're creating custom firmware.
Well, what the freeloader's one mechanism against this is that it has some sort of boot mechanism where if you put the disc in twice, if you put insert it, take it out, insert it, take it out, it goes into like a sort of different kind of mode whereby it actually sort of lets, for instance, games that say they need to have the newest firmware to play, like I think Brawl did, it can try and bypass that. Now, the thing is, I don't think Brawl ultimately contained anything that was going to break it anyway, so that was never a real test of it. But the freeloader has some kind of countermeasure for it. But whether that's probably, if Nintendo decide to do this, I don't think that's going to... What's been talked about doesn't sound like that would really help. So,
right, and it's also quite possible that the newest version of firmware could in fact be required for something in game too.
I think the other thing is, of course, is that the people that make the freeloader may well come back with a new one at some point, so it may not be completely, that works a different way, that maybe doesn't use an exploit that's more commonly used by people who are doing somewhat more nefarious things with their Wiis. That may help them avoid being blocked in the future after that. So, I mean, there's that possibility as well.
All right. So next question, John.
All right. This is from, let me see, who's actually sending this? This is from Adolf. I'm assuming that's Adolf. Adolf Vega. As you may or may not know, Nintendo of Japan used a satellite, the BSX, and offered downloadable games. During certain times of the day, you can play the games, and if you paid a little extra, you could save them, or else they would be lost forever. Some examples of the games are remixed classics, and a few were brand new games. Example of a new game, Mario Excitebike, and there's a YouTube link there. And an example of another remixed game is Link to the Past, remixed with new levels and such. Any chance that Nintendo will place them on WiiWare? Many of the games are finished and in English and well-known franchises, so they would sell. P.S. Can Greg please send me a free copy of Freshly Picked Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land? Thank you. Adolf Vega.
I think we've covered the Rupee Land last week, and the answer was no.
But, you know, I would just like to comment that this looks strangely like Anglophilic Man Love to me.
Oh, no.
Anybody? Maybe I'm just crazy.
Oh, no.
You really think it's all that common that it might apply to more than one person?
I think so. I think it's awesome. I think, yeah, definitely.
Well, as for the actual question, I think I can offer a pretty definitive no. These games were, a lot of them had assets that were actually broadcast while you were playing them from the satellite view, the BSX, that are gone. I mean, for example, that Link to the Past remake or re-envisioning or whatever.
Reimagined? Is that the word you're
looking for? Yes, the reimagining had music that was actually being broadcast down the system. So it was, you know, it wasn't something that was actually on the original file you downloaded to play the game. It was something that was coming down for it. And I think it had some voice acting too and some other stuff that was the same way.
See, but Nintendo's such a weird company because they do something like that that was no doubt years ahead of its time. But then they completely bring out online like this year, and it sucks.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
I don't understand.
They did something similar with the NES too in Japan, or the Famicom. The NES did have a modem in the U.S., but it was only used by like the Minnesota State Lottery. It was bizarre. That's a really bizarre story. And if anybody wants to read something completely unexplainable, go ahead and look up NES modem and lottery, and you'll get this bizarre scenario of things that took place. But that's not really what we're talking about right now. I think the situation with the satellite view games, I personally would buy the Mario Excitebike, having watched that video, because it looks kind of awesome.
Yeah, it does.
The Link to the Past one is kind of weird. Link's wearing what looks like a, like he's about to do the psychic sketch off Johnny Carson's show, and he has a bee following him around. But it's pretty bizarre looking, but honestly, I don't even know if Nintendo would even, I hate to say this, but they've done it before, still have the code for these games, because there were such a bizarre release system, and I don't think the satellite view had that big of a distribution. It is quite conceivable they don't have all the assets to the game that they originally put together for it, especially the stuff that was broadcast.
And I bet that's possible.
And I'm not exactly sure if they were the ones running the show with the satellite view or if they were just sort of providing content. Something tells me, or if I seem to recall, that somebody else was actually running the thing and they were just sort of providing the license and some content to go into it.
Yeah, it's unlikely that these will come out, but they could spend all 3 seconds and Google either or any title they release on there, and I guarantee you you'll find some sort of ROM that a fan patched together and has pretty much everything in it. So,
but some of these ROMs are really bizarre because they'll have like components of the game because it was sent in such a strange manner.
Right.
And you know, the sound stuff isn't there. It wasn't in the ROM file. It wasn't in the dump. It was actually being broadcast to the system in real time or pseudo real time. So, you know, it would be hard to put that stuff back together.
Yeah. I played BS Zelda, not this BS Zelda. There's two of them. I guess there's this one, which is like the Master Quest Link to the Past, and then there's like, I guess what you could construe as a Master Quest to the original Legend of Zelda, but with SNES assets. And I played that one, and that one's complete and could probably be released. And it's one ROM and nothing crazy about it. But Yeah, it's, there's no way.
Yeah, I'm sad to say it, because that Mario Excitebike looks awesome.
Yeah.
Something about racing Toad down a track intentionally trying to crash him into barriers makes my heart swell.
It's pretty poetic, man.
Yeah, it's... Yes. But unfortunately, I just don't feel like it's going to happen. I mean, it's just not something that Nintendo would be the kind of company that would do.
If this was Sega,
I would be a little bit more optimistic it was going to happen, because they've actually released some of their online service games from the past. But Nintendo doesn't have any history of this, even though these games have been around for a little while. If they did do it, I can say almost certainly it wouldn't be as a virtual console title. It would be in some way they could really charge for it, because they would hit you hard with this one. It might even be a WiiWare title.
Yeah, I doubt it would come out anywhere other than Japan. So
yeah, I mean, sure. Even if the game is translated, I mean, what was it? I can't remember the name now. The Treasure Shooter.
Sin and Punishment.
Yeah, Sin and Punishment was in English for 10 years before it ever saw release outside of Japan.
Yeah.
But then again, we've seen those Japanese games come out on the Virtual Console, so I guess that might not preclude
it.
Just dump it
with the Japanese in. Yeah. I think they did some F-Zero as well. Like, I don't know if it was like a real F-Zero 2 or anything, but it was like extra tracks or something on the Satellaview, so...
Yeah, I think they did. And then, of course, they had the F-Zero 64DD, which will never
F-Zero
see a ROM
for whatever reason is very kind of, gets that treatment a
lot.
It
has a very weird history, and including one of the GBA titles, which isn't canon. It's actually canon for the TV show.
Yeah. Oh, that's so bizarre.
What the hell, man? But, you know, like, I think it's going to be the same situation with the 64DD titles. We're not going to see ROM dumps of these games or virtual console buys of these games because they did have a weird distribution system.
Right.
And I just think Nintendo will probably say it's just not worth our time.
Yeah,
although I would love to get Doshin the Giant.
I have that.
did you buy a 64DD?
No, well, I'm going to eventually when I can find one. But when I went to London a few years back, I picked up Doshin the Giant.
Why the hell was that on sale in London?
It came out in Europe I got the GameCube version. Not the N64DD version. I did get the GameCube version, which isn't bad, by the way.
Yeah, because I remember what Chris Kohler said when he was on here for the N64 retrospective, replacing us, and now we're replacing Johnny. He said something like, the 64DD was just made to be sold in Akihabara and then resold in Akihabara until finally some foreign tourist came and bought it and took it out of the country.
Yeah. I will one day be one of those foreign tourists who take it out of the country.
One day there's going to be no 64DDs left in Japan. They're all going to be in Europe and America. But they're all still sealed in the box. I mean, somebody had to know what was going on if they're still freaking sealed.
Oh, I think everybody knew what was going on before that thing came out.
Destined for
failure.
Yeah, so...
I suppose we should say the one vague precedent for this is the fact that that weird, like, 64DD Zelda eventually reared its head as the Master Quest on
the
GameCube disc. So that's, like, the closest thing to precedent that we have for something like that.
And I remember back... I don't know how many years ago it was when it was first showed the Master Quest. I remember there being this screenshot in some gaming magazine thinking, oh my god, there's another Zelda coming out? And then I read it was about 64DD, and then I said along the lines of, oh fuck, I'm never getting that.
Back then, back on the during the DD days, oh god, I can't believe I just said that. during those days, anyway, that it was known as Ura Zelda, wasn't it? Very generic kind of placeholder thing, and then it just never materialized at all, even when the DD eventually did.
Yeah, and did the Ura Zelda come out in Japan?
I don't think so. No, I know that's what it is. I don't think that came out on DD anywhere. But then,
that's an even more bizarre precedent.
Yeah, I suppose that's right. Actually, because these games at least did exist in the public domain.
They were tangible, and people played them.
Yeah, so that I guess that's the one ray of hope for Adolf, possibly, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on it. And that was a much more conventional situation than this thing, where we don't even really know who has the rights to these games or if they still even exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe they'll grant us our wish and let us race Toad along a completely horizontal track that somehow allows you to turn despite the fact you never turn. We'll find out. But that's all we have for reader mail this week. Of course, you can send us your reader mail. We need it. To rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I hope you can figure out how to spell that. Send us your hate mail, too, because it makes us feel good to know that we're ruining someone's day.
You're an evil man, James. An evil man.
Oh, I know. I could have given him Johnny's email address. That would have been much better. Mm-hmm. Also, we're still looking for ideas for our upcoming episode 100. This is 97, I remember.
Yeah, getting tight.
We're running out of time, man, and we've got nothing. Was I not supposed to reveal that? So, once again, if you have any ideas for what you want us to do or a segment we could do for someone you want to bring back, odds are we can't bring back who you want us to, send us an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, same email address. And that's all we have for this week. So I'd like to thank Nick, Greg, and John.
Thanks, Sim.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, buddy.
And that's it. See ya.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody ready?
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2. I didn't.
Yeah, what happened there?
What are you people doing? Brutal. I didn't finish.
Yeah, I didn't even hear it. I didn't even hear us finish.
Well, it got 5, 4, 3, 2, and then nothing for ages on my
end. I got 5, 4, 3, and then I heard, and I was like, what the hell? Who clapped?
That was me. I'm sorry. I thought I lost you there for a second.